From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, it looks like Icicle's new buyer is serious about expanding into the U.S. An early breakup may affect run timing on the Copper River. And what kind of liability do you have as a skipper? All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay. Permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Now, after more than a year on the market, Icicle Seafoods has a buyer. Canada-based Cook Aquaculture announced Monday it's purchasing Icicle to build its presence in U.S. farmed salmon and gain a major foothold in Alaska's wild fisheries. Nell Hulse is a company spokeswoman.
The first interest point would have been the farm salmon operations in the state of Washington. That's what drew them to the opportunity. But the more I think that they ventured into understanding the full scope of the company and its three different business units, I think there was a real excitement and interest in acquiring the whole operation.
Icicle has three main components. It's farmed salmon in Washington State, wild salmon in Alaska, and the rest of its Alaska fisheries, such as pollock, halibut, cod, and herring. There was speculation that Icicle would be sold off in parts rather than a whole. Last June, parent investment firm Payne and Partners announced a deal with Indonesian investors, but that sale fell apart 2 months later. Some of Alaska's CDQ groups and a few other companies, such as Silver Bay, Trident, and Copper River, had shown interest in the venerable old company, but none panned out. Hulse says combining Icicle's products with Cook's customer base, marketing, and distribution will be a good fit. She says Icicle's CEO and other management will stay on, and no other major changes are planned.
We want to maintain the relationships and invest in this company. We're here for the long term.
In terms of Icicle's sale, we're not disclosed. The deal is expected to be finalized by next month. So how can boat captains protect against litigation? Well, get some P&I insurance, says Dillingham attorney Jürgen Jensen, and use a medical questionnaire to screen prospective crewmen. When a fisherman falls sick or is injured during the season, who pays the medical bills, the crewman or the skipper? That was a topic covered by Jensen at a recent Business of Fish session at the Bristol Bay campus in Dillingham. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
Jensen explained that boat captains can sometimes be on the hook for what's called maintenance and cure. It's a protection for crew members that's similar to workers' comp.
You know, injuries are pretty obvious. Somebody's going to get hurt. You lose a finger, obviously, that's an injury that's going to happen on the boat or something like that. This can also come up from illnesses. If somebody falls ill with cancer and they're on your boat fishing, the court will say you owe maintenance and cure. You will owe for medical bills while they're getting cured of cancer and owe the daily maintenance rate. Daily maintenance rate generally ranges between $35 and $55 a day.
There are some exceptions, says Jensen. Generally, a captain won't be held liable if the crew member is willfully misbehaving, drinking heavily, for example, or if the worker conceals a pre-existing condition, say a back injury from a previous job. But Jensen says there have been many odd cases that may strike fear in the hearts of boat owners.
This one actually I find disturbing. A gentleman fell on the boat, hit his head, complained of headaches, but didn't get medical care for it. He was later fired for fighting. 5 months later, came up with a brain tumor. Because he complained of the headaches, the court said that arose when he was in the service of the vessel and they held the boat liable for maintenance and cure.
In a worst-case scenario, Jensen says, a federal court can sue not only a boat captain, but they can arrest the boat itself, potentially leaving it literally high and dry while litigation works itself out. So the best thing a captain can do to protect against these scenarios, says Jensen, is to get P&I insurance. That's protection and indemnity insurance.
Make this the insurance company's problem. Don't involve yourself with this. I have had a case very recently of an uninsured captain got held up for exactly what I just talked about. Don't get held up like that because you won't be able to keep your boat if they want to take it. You can't hide your boat in bankruptcy. You can't get around it in any other way.
It's also a good idea to have potential crew fill out a medical questionnaire before they sign a contract.
What you want to do is you want to find out who you're hiring and if they have any injuries, because if they misrepresent those injuries and they get injured, you can get around paying that maintenance and cure.
The Alaska Sea Grant Fish Biz Project has a sample crew contract with a medical questionnaire, as well as more information about the types of insurance policies fishing vessels should carry. You can find that information at fishbiz.seagrant.uaf.edu. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Southeast Alaska's regional native corporation is back in the business of seafood. Juneau-based Sea Alaska Monday announced the purchase of a minority share of a Seattle processing plant. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Independent Packers Corporation is a specialty plant that processes about 50 million pounds of seafood annually. It's the first of several investments the corporation plans to announce this year. Sea Alaska Chief Operating Officer Terry Downs says it's a successful enterprise insulated from some of the industry's ups and downs.
The reason we like the business is because it's in the middle of the supply chain. You know, they touch a lot of different seafood companies. They never actually own the resource themselves, so they're not exposed to commodity price fluctuations. And so, you know, the earnings are more stable.
Sea Alaska bought less than half of the company, making it a minority owner. Down says a confidentiality agreement prohibits him from releasing the amount invested or exact percentage purchased. He says the seafood business is part of a corporate strategy adopted in 2012.
In the past, Sea Alaska had owned businesses at arm's length, like plastics, injection molding, things like that. They didn't fit geographically, and they didn't fit with respect to the sector, and they didn't feel like businesses really felt like part of Sea Alaska and its ownership.
Sea Alaska has bought and sold companies for years, looking for new sources of revenue. But not everyone supports that strategy. Brad Flitch, a Juneau financial manager and Sea Alaska board candidate, says the purchases should stop. He's not ready to address the latest investment, but he says the stock market is a better bet.
Cavilco, the anchor corporation for the community of Kasan, you know, they have the right model. You know, and just be a passive portfolio company. They don't own any operating businesses.
Sea Alaska has invested in fisheries before. There was Ocean Beauty Seafoods in the 1980s, but it was sold. More recently, the corporation put money into reopening Cake's fish processing plant. It's also invested in oyster farming. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
An early breakup on the Copper River may accelerate salmon moving upstream. Glen Allen Area State Sportfish Biologist Mark Somerville says little ice remains and water levels are unusually low, which are conditions which could lead to warmer water and trigger early fish migration.
I would anticipate them to be a little bit early just based on what I'm seeing, but don't hold me to that.
Somerville says the first sockeye and king salmon are usually counted moving up the lower Copper River in mid-May. This year's Copper River salmon run is forecast to be over 2.5 million fish, the 10th largest on record. The estimate includes 64,000 king salmon.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Fisheries researchers say North Pacific salmon species may be competing for prey, perhaps even adversely affecting the population of each other. The pink salmon fishery, the staple of Southeast Alaska's commercial finfish fisheries, may be benefiting from all that competition. KTOO's Matt Miller tells us the story.
These pink salmon that we got in early this year are some of the largest I've seen in quite a long time. That's John Joyce, fisheries research biologist at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute in Aka Bay, in an interview last summer. As the waters of Aka Creek flowed over rocks and salmon lingered in a nearby pool, Joyce explained the creek's weir features over 35 years of continuous data that is valuable for climate change research. Joyce says the adult pink salmon are returning earlier every summer, a total of 2 weeks earlier since counting started. Last year's returning pinks also came back in big numbers in the northern part of southeast Alaska. They were also bigger than usual, about 12% heavier than the previous year.
Okay, we're back. Now, when did this start?
During the Salmon Ocean Ecology Meeting in Juneau in March, research biologists presented their findings, suggested that some Pacific Ocean salmon species are benefiting from a competition for food resources. Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Leon Shaw says they've noticed a trend develop in the Gulf of Alaska and southeast Alaska over the last several decades. Older Chinook and Coho are getting smaller, while young reds and pinks are getting bigger.
The size of salmon in the region has shown a pattern of convergence, with everything that was smaller 30, 35 years ago trending larger and the larger fish trending smaller.
Shaw wonders if the salmon's forage base is being altered by the recent swings in water temperature. When ocean temperatures are cool, young pink salmon usually grow by feeding on the bigger and fattier zooplankton. It just so happens that squid like zooplankton too.
Pink salmon may be changing the whole forage base, similar to the phenomenon of fishing down the marine food web, taking out the squid, which is a direct competitor with them for zooplankton. And so the pink salmon is an intra-gilled predator that both eats its competitor and eats the prey of its competitor.
And it's also possible that when pink salmon bulk up by consuming squid, they're also depriving offshore coho and chinook of their primary food source. Shaw acknowledges that they still haven't pinned down whether young pinks are benefiting from more zooplankton because those older pinks are scooping up all the squid. And since less fatty zooplankton are prevalent during warm conditions, they're still not sure how pinks are still getting bigger with a recent warm water anomaly known as the blob in the Northeast Pacific. Elsewhere in the North Pacific, researchers have already documented what they believe is one salmon species crowding out another. Greg Ruggioni of Seattle-based Natural Resources Consultants explained how he believes Bristol Bay red salmon runs are affected by eastern Kamchatka pink salmon runs. Pinks usually take 2 years to mature, while reds usually take 3 years. And since both stocks intermingle in the North Pacific, huge pink runs compete for food with the young reds during their second year at sea.
And basically what you see is a very strong alternating year pattern. Pink salmon are about 40% more abundant in odd-numbered years. When there's lots of pink salmon, you see the reduction in growth, and it's fairly consistent over time.
And as well as smaller growth for red salmon, Ruggioni says there are fewer of them in alternating years in Bristol Bay. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Dave Benninger and Hannah Colton in Dillingham, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, KUAC's Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and KTOO's Matt Miller in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.